I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, welcome to Adulting. This is the podcast where I try to figure out what it means to be an adult in this day and age and what things affect us as we grow up. And today I'm joined by Dr. Joshua Woolrich. It's a bit of a mouthful.
That's close enough.
And he is a trainee surgeon. Is that right? Is that the right thing to say? Yeah. So Dr. Trainee Surgeon, also a content creator and hesitant influencer. He's not sure about the word.
Just the word.
Yeah. And so Joshua's Instagram kind of focuses on his term is Nutribollocks. So it's breaking down kind of made up information that gets passed around media, social media, and all these outlets that basically prey on people's insecurities to make money, whether that's diet industries or things like that. Would you say that's kind of your focus?
Yeah, I think I'd say it's what makes me the most angry.
Right.
The most worked up about social media in general, I think, is just the way that people have the ability to tell a large group or a large following something without any responsibility to have to back it up with any sort of truth.
So you've recently come in, well, I don't know how quickly you've grown, but your Instagram's quite big now. You've got like almost 100,000 followers.
Yeah.
And how did you come from being, I mean, obviously you're already pretty busy being a doctor. That's already quite heavy. How did you get into coming onto social media? How did you find your narrative, and what kind of drove you to talk about this?
Well, I think it's definitely changed. I think like anyone on social media, I started it maybe a few years ago now as a way of documenting my journey to lose weight, which I'm sure thousands of people, if not hundreds of thousands of people, will recognize as a similar story.
Yeah.
But it's turned into something I didn't quite expect it to. So I was just posting pictures of food. I always loved to cook. I realized that if I was going to lose weight, I needed to do that via food. So I was posting pictures of food and trying to use it to have my friends keep me accountable. I never used Instagram before this at all. Mm. I don't think I had it on my phone. So I downloaded it to do that because I was like, where do you post pictures of food? Instagram, that'll do. And during that journey, it's turned into a lot less of me posting pictures of food, and now a lot more of me posting about certain myths and beliefs that people have around food and diet, and it's really turned into trying to promote one's relationship with food. It was a phrase I'd never considered at the beginning, and it's now something that I am very much passionate about.
When you were on your own weight loss journey, did you fall victim to myths and tricks that you realized would actually bullshit?
Massively. I, being a doctor, didn't mean that I didn't fall into that trap, because I still grew up hearing the same nonsense, and as I'm sure people are aware of, because it is being mentioned on Instagram and on social media, us doctors don't really get that much teaching around nutrition. We have very minimal exposure to it during our degree. We have 6 years, but we have very little time dedicated to nutrition, which does seem silly. And some of that is changing, and that is good. But because of that, I left with relatively the same amount of insight and knowledge as to what I needed to do to lose weight as anyone else.
I mean, to play devil's advocate, it might sound like that's ridiculous that doctors don't get taught about food, but you do get taught a hell of a lot of other stuff in that time. And there are like nutritionists and dietitians who are specific to food-based things.
Definitely.
So it does make sense. But I do agree, it is interesting, because like my sister's a doctor, my dad's a doctor, and I remember when I first started learning about carbs and stuff, my sister was like, no, that's not true. Carbs are really bad for you. And you'd think she'd know more. So that is a really interesting, and I think you're right, it's a conversation that's coming up a lot more. But I do think sometimes the language used towards doctors who aren't that aware of nutrition is slightly unfair, and people get a bit annoyed about it.
I think there's there are good reasons for that. And I try, when I see stuff like that, I try not to, I think it got to me at the beginning. I think when people said they're a doctor, they know nothing about nutrition, why are you listening to them? I was like, hang on a second, but granted, I didn't learn much about nutrition, but I did learn how to critically appraise research.
Yeah.
I learned how to be non-biased when it comes to looking at information that's out there. So I think I'm really well placed to be able to critically analyze the information that's out there around nutrition. So for example, carbs, I think I'm quite good at looking at the research that's available and knowing what to believe and what not to believe and how to analyze the body of research around carbs. But I agree, there are a lot of doctors who are promoting a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that gives us all a bad name.
Yes. And it's funny because as well, you'll get people saying like, oh, it's so awful, you can't believe doctors. And yet the great thing about accounts like yours and people who are coming at it from a more scientific, evidential point is there are also just random people online who've started accounts with absolutely no credence or background to be talking about food and are talking about it in a very, very assertive, assured way. And they are just chatting absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
Briefly, before we get onto that, because I know that we've got a lot to say. A funny question, because normally it's never this way around, but what's it like being a man in this industry? And what was it like? I don't really hear many guys talking about weight loss or suffering. Mm. I don't know if you had really bad body image. You talk about your relationship with food, but that's actually something we don't hear very much on social media.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought of it that much like that until being exposed to the world of Instagram and seeing that the majority of people that are championing that's terrible grammar there. The most of the people that are championing people to improve their body image are women. And it's great that anyone's doing it, but it is slightly disappointing that there aren't as many guys doing it. I think the reason being is that the world has a much more negative view on women's bodies than they do on guys' bodies. And we're definitely not under the same pressure as you are in regards to having to look a certain way or having to dress a certain way, or, you know, I mean, we don't have makeup, for example. It's just not a thing yet, I guess.
Yeah.
So there are so many of those things where we have other struggles that are kind of more guy focused, I guess, but our looks is something that's not really talked about. But I definitely had issues with my appearance as a kid. I definitely had issues with whether I found myself attractive, but I don't really know. I can't really, seeing as I'm only a guy, I'm not both, I can't really say that I can't really explain too much as to how mine was different. I can explain my experience.
Yeah, your experience. But so not you don't necessarily comparatively, but I guess just that narrative around men's bodies isn't the same. As you say, women are very much in life told that, you know, your appearance is everything. And so the reason that there are lots more women out there promoting body image, which I don't know if that's good or bad, I don't necessarily think it's a good thing, is because obviously we're objectified by our bodies. But by the same token, I think that people don't realise that all the men we see out there online, there's a bigger diversity, but still guys are still expected to look a certain way. And I don't think that is spoken about as much, because of the fact that guys aren't always allowed to speak about the fact that they might feel insecure, because that's seen as unmanly. So there is like layers to the
there's those labels as to what makes someone masculine, isn't it, that is a lot of the time a load of rubbish.
And
being masculine sometimes conveys itself as hiding your feelings and not showing weakness and all that kind of stuff, and it is a load of rubbish. But it's definitely something that affects guys. It's definitely something that affected me growing up. I was always, I turned into a pretty chubby kid, which we can get into. I think I messaged you about some of that stuff. At the age of about 12, 13, when my parents split up, and there were lots of things that happened to influence my relationship with food, which we can talk about.
Yeah.
But that led to me being quite an overweight teenager. And your teenage years are your formative years, aren't they? And those are the years when you learn about yourself, you think you're starting to learn about yourself. You start to be attracted to other people. You start then focusing on what you look like, because you're like, oh, but they won't like me if I look like this. And it just becomes a big spiral. And so as a guy, I was definitely exposed to all of that kind of stuff.
How much do you feel like so when you're younger, and you I mean, that's probably quite a common story when anyone goes to childhood trauma or anything that's really difficult to deal with, we often do turn to food or any kind of, I don't want to say hedonism, it's not the right word, but something that's going to comfort us. But when you then became a teenager and you were slightly aware of your weight and you felt self-conscious, how much did you attribute to your parents' breakup, or did you not really even realise that it was the food that had done it?
I had no idea. Yeah. This was only something that I realised really in the last kind of couple of years.
Yeah.
And even the other day I mentioned something on my Instagram and my sister messaged me and was like, I didn't know you felt that way. And I was like, yeah, no, this is, I know we've never spoken about it, but this is something that I realized as I've gone on, that to give you an example, my dad's an alcoholic, and he would get so drunk sometimes whilst making dinner that he thought that he'd fed me. So I'd kind of be waiting for dinner, and then I'd be told to go to bed, and I'd be like, hang on, where, like, and this is, you know, I'm 11, 12. I'm like, I'm hungry. But if I argued, I'd get in trouble.
Right.
And so I ended up having to go to bed and waiting for my mum to come home. And then I'd tell her, no, we hadn't actually been fed. And then she'd give us food. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was, I think my relationship with food was quite specific due to some of the stuff that happened. Obviously, there are lots of things that happen in people's teenage years and formative years that affect their relationship with all sorts of things. But I think mine was, I think I had a specific food side of things. And so I ended up thinking, oh, well, if I don't know if I'm going to have dinner, I'll just sort my own food out. And so what does a 12-year-old do for dinner? He eats Pringles. You know, he doesn't have any other option. Like, he doesn't know what he's meant to eat. He just eats something easy.
That's like you say, that's a really specific and really like sad thing that you went through with food. And then on top of that, you just touched on it, but what I was about to ask was, then again, we also have no understanding of nutrition. This is another thing I have difficulty with, because whether or not we should teach kids about nutrition, I also don't know, because I think, especially if it comes calories counting, those kind of things.
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
No. But for instance, like, my mum was always trying to make us healthy, but had absolutely no fucking clue what she was talking about when it came to food. So it would be absolutely fine for us to eat like a family of five portion of shepherd's pie, and we had to finish it, had to sit there and eat it. But you couldn't possibly have one piece of chocolate, because in her head, her understanding of nutrition was a wholesome meal is fine,
no matter how much of it you have.
But sugar is bad. So I was so deprived of sugar that when I got to uni, I used to buy Pick and Mix every single day, because I couldn't believe that I was allowed to have it. When you have, so you've not only got, I guess, your dad on the one side maybe not literally nourishing you, but when it was coming from your mum or other people in your family, did you also have a distorted understanding of the properties of food, do you think?
I don't think as a family we touched on it that much, actually.
Right.
I think were it not to have been for some of that very specific stuff that happened, I think that my understanding of food would have been actually quite good. We always had home-cooked meals. Not that that's automatically better, but it does help.
Yeah.
So we rarely ate out, but if we did, it wasn't seen as a big deal.
Yes.
My mum loves chocolate, so we would have chocolate in the house, and she would, we weren't allowed it because it was a treat and it was her chocolate, but we'd be given it and that'd be fine.
Yeah.
But it wasn't seen as, it's bad for you, therefore you can only have one piece.
Right.
That was never a narrative that took place in our house, which I like. But that's only something really that's come from kind of society in general, I think, that I picked up that certain things were bad for you, certain things were good for you. Because otherwise, if I'd have picked that up in one way, I think I would have felt bad about eating a whole tub of Pringles, and I never did.
That's funny, because my mum's understanding of food was her own conditioning. I remember her poring over these magazines where they'd be like, oh, you're a pear shape, an apple shape, or a whatever shape, looking at all these bodies. I can remember that so clearly, and I can see now exactly how my mum went from reading that magazine to feeding us and feeding herself, and how even when she was emancipating her own feelings from something, she would feed us based off of what she thought
was the best.
And it was all down to like women's magazine. I can honestly see that now, but obviously at the time you wouldn't have known that. And even now that conditioning is so strong within people, which is why accounts like yours are so helpful, because you don't realise how long these stories surrounding bodies and food and stuff have been so prevalent.
Yeah, you have no idea until you look back on it.
Yeah.
I remember my mum, having just said that my mum was quite good at not teaching us nonsense, I do remember one thing, and that was when I was quite a lot older, so I think I was probably 19, 20, and I was like, Mum, I need to lose weight. And like, how do I do this? And she told me that the best way of doing so was to make sure that when you bought a sandwich for lunch, you looked at the back, and if it had less than 10 grams of fat in it, that was fine.
Amazing.
It's like, no. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, and I went and bought that. And I was like, where has that come from? She denies it now. She's like, I never said that. I remember it vividly. That was what I did for a while.
That is amazing. To this day, my mum will just say, oh, just don't eat bread. Just don't eat bread. Literally always just cut out bread. I don't even eat bread that much. So I don't know what, it wouldn't even make that much of a difference. So going forward, so then you are, so 1920, I guess the age when you were like, right, I'm going to do something about...
Well, I think it's... Well, actually, it was a bit earlier than that, but I think that was the time when I asked my mum what for help. Because she was never... She was always quite lithe, and that's kind of just part of her body style and just in general. So it's... I was almost going to say body type, but that's not a thing. So yes. Let's not get into that. But that's just her. And so she's... We all know people that can seem to eat whatever they like and stay thin. And, you know, that's just... So I thought, oh, my mum knows what she's doing. That's fine. But... You know, that wasn't necessarily the case, but I definitely tried a lot earlier.
That's so interesting that you say that, actually, because it kind of ties into everything. So on the one hand, we've got all this information about how specific nutrition is, in terms of like, it's not specific foods and stuff, it's what they're made of. But then there's the other conversation of people's bodies are so disparate, like everyone's body does certain things, people have different metabolisms. And your mum, probably because she'd always maybe been slim, probably had a really good relationship with food, because in life a slim body is what we see as a healthy, good body.
She would have been less exposed to some of it, because she was searching for it less.
And then I think, I guess my mum maybe had a bad relationship with her body at some point, so she started to look at food. And it's all so closely tied in. I think sometimes we don't realise quite how politicised bodies are, as well as food, and there's problems of like money and food. Sorry, this is going a bit like off, but I was just thinking about it. It was very interesting to realise how much we really don't understand food, and we will literally take advice from the person that looks right, which is what happens with Instagram. There are definitely people with very good natural bodies that look a certain way. That might be that they've got really big arms if you're a guy, really big bum if you're a girl, but it might be that they just look like that.
Yeah, your genetics don't mean you know what you're talking about with food.
But unfortunately, the way that, especially in inception of Instagram, the way that it happened was a lot of it was based off of that.
It's visual.
Yeah. So... Sorry, going back to it. So then you start your weight loss journey, and then you lose weight. And
so I tried to lose weight as a teenager, because I was at school and I got bullied about it.
Right.
So you know, it's I found myself being bullied about all sorts of things. I don't know whether I was an easy target, but basically either my hair was too short, my hair was too long, I was too fat, my nose was too big, my nose was too small. Literally, it was like opposite things that I still was hurt by, even though I realized that there was no you know, rationale behind it. But it meant that I decided that I needed to lose weight. And I decided I needed to lose weight because I wasn't attractive. Right. That was reason number one.
Yeah.
I didn't care about... I had no idea about health. I had no idea about anything else. You don't when you're 14, 15. You don't care. Ironically, I had long-term girlfriends from the age of like 14. And a friend of mine a while back called me a serial monogamist. So I never necessarily had trouble having a girlfriend, but I always thought that
you
I wasn't attractive enough. Obviously, looking back on it makes perfect sense that your personality is far more important than
your
looks.
But exactly.
In the moment, you're like, if I don't lose weight, I'm going to lose my girlfriend.
Yeah.
That was the feeling. It was, I'm so unattractive. I don't know why this is happening right now. I have a girlfriend, but it's not going to last very long unless I sort myself out.
Yeah.
Because she'll find, and that led to me being, I was a terrible boyfriend.
Yeah, no,
because
I was
a massively jealous boyfriend.
Yeah,
because I thought that every other person that she talked to was
better.
Because they're more attractive, they were thinner than me, so she was going to go. I don't know if any of them are listening to this, but I'm sorry.
But I mean, that's part of the problem of the very small paradigms of beauty that we portray in the media, and like what attractive is anyway. Because I think we all know that you probably fancied someone that, if you wrote down on a piece of paper what your type on paper is #LoveIsland, you'd probably right, like a really like, oh, tall, dark and handsome. But we all know that you can fancy pretty much anyone just off the basis of anything. So attractiveness in of itself is a really weird concept that we decide is just about looks, when it's very much not. Sorry, completely gone off on a tangent. So anyway, so you start your weight loss journey.
Yeah.
Well, fast forward it to...
I failed massively.
Right.
And, but before we fast forward, I'd say the reason I failed massively is because I just tried everything that I thought I was meant to do.
Did you do the cabbage soup diet?
No, I don't. I'm not sure if that was the thing at that point.
Oh, I did that one.
In 2000 and when would we have been? 2006.
Oh, I was doing that around 2K10, I'd say.
Ooh, 2K10. How we label it? Sorry, 2K06. Is that no? I just did standard things of starving myself.
Yeah.
Which didn't work because I got hungry and then I ate. And binging. And then I starved myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start restricting, binging. It just, yeah. But I would never have labeled it as that. I would never have seen it as that. I cut carbs. And I even cut carbs after starting Instagram, but shh, don't tell.
Oh, yeah.
Because I still don't know what I was doing. And that didn't work. I tried eating sandwiches with less than 10 grams of fat in it.
Exciting.
surprisingly, that didn't work either. I tried exercising more. I don't think I deliberately tried exercising more, but I remember exercising quite a lot and going, why am I still overweight? I used to cycle from my house in Southwest London all the way up to Northwick Park Hospital, which was about 12, 13 miles each way.
Oh, wow.
And I used to cycle, that was for one of my university placements as a medical student. And I used to cycle that every day. So it was like 2 hours of cycling, up hills, all sorts of things. I got really good at cycling. I never lost any weight.
Did you have good fitness anyway?
I got fit by cycling. So I think my kind of cardiovascular strength and stuff was quite good.
Yeah.
And my endurance was quite good. I could cycle for a long distance despite being quite heavy. I was strong from the waist down.
Right.
But I had absolutely no strength anywhere else.
Yeah.
Couldn't do a push-up to save my life, but I could cycle 30 miles.
Amazing.
So it was a weird, but to me that made no sense logically. I was like, so why am I still overweight?
Yeah.
Because you assume that people that are overweight don't exercise, right?
Yeah.
You assume that if you're overweight, it means you're lying in bed all day. Well, and I think another assumption that's made that's not true.
And also you believe that, I used to be this as well, it's kind of what you're saying, that if you exercise, you can't possibly be, like, how could you put on weight? I didn't realise that. I used to do the thing when I first started exercising, I'd then eat double because you'd be like, well, I've just done exercise.
It's fine.
So I need more food. It literally took me forever to realise that that's not how it works. Because you'd be like, well, now I've got to eat more. And it's like, no, they go together. But also, like, I think people put, well, I was about to say people put an undue onus on exercise, because I think a lot of people don't realise that you could literally just change your diet and you'd lose weight.
Hmm.
I think people don't, I didn't realise that either. I don't know if you felt that way.
No, definitely. I thought that exercise was kind of
paramount,
important, number one, yeah. And I've definitely had, I think I can probably share this without breaking confidentiality. I had a patient maybe 2 years ago. That's fine, you see, because you have no idea where I worked 2 years ago, so it's fine. I had a patient 2 years ago who, I was working in orthopedics and she had some joint pain, I think it was knee pain, and it was relevant at the time that her size was affecting her pain.
Right.
To clarify, I'm not a doctor who always thinks that somebody's weight is affecting their medical conditions, because that's not true.
Yeah.
We can get onto that later if you want.
Yeah.
But in this situation, it was a factor into why she was getting knee pain, because you've got an increased load on your knees. The weight just makes a difference. And somehow we got onto it, and I think I mentioned it in as polite a way as I could, and she got really, really angry at me and told me that the reason she couldn't lose weight was because she couldn't exercise because she had pain in her knee.
Yeah.
And I was like, but I can try and address this. I was like, you know what? I tried to make it into a really good thing. I tried to make it into a positive. I was like, no, actually, it's okay, because as much as exercise is helpful, we really can change our weight through our diet.
Yeah.
And I then got in more trouble.
Well, talking to women about food as well, you do not realise, I didn't even realise until I got older, about how money lies, you're taught about food, especially as a woman, and how actually it's really touchy. If someone tells you you're eating too little, too much, it doesn't matter. It's really, it's the weirdest thing.
Definitely.
But it feels so personal. So I can completely imagine why. Not, and I think you're in the right, but I can imagine why, because of the way, and it's not doctor's fault, and you should be able to say things like that, but because of our conditioning, an overweight woman being told by a man to eat less.
I was going to say that as well. As a guy, I think I was completely in a difficult place.
Because of the way society conditions you just feel like, and it shouldn't be that hard. Food shouldn't have such a moral dilemma, which is, we'll talk about that as well, but it's like, that should be fine. But we just, the way that it's because of places that don't have the right to talk about food have been talking about food for so long and in such a wrong way, it means that your literal physician can't be like, this might be helpful, without that being a really personal, painful conversation.
But also, I think as doctors, we need to take responsibility for what we've done.
Yeah.
Not necessarily what we're current, although some people still are currently doing, but we've definitely produced a narrative over the years of, if you're overweight, you're automatically unhealthy.
Yeah.
If your BMI is over a certain amount, you're automatically unhealthy. And every time you go to the doctor, it gets mentioned and mentioned about how you should lose weight. And that doesn't help. And I think we need to acknowledge the fact that we've done more harm than good in the past to be able to move on and still mention it now. And I don't know how we do that. And it's hard and it's going to take time. But I agree with you. There are times when it is, and I believe there are times when it's important to be able to mention it. And to be able to try and address it, but we need to make sure that we're recognizing the harm we've done so far.
Yeah, and I think with weight and things, like I do remember, like, you go to get your pill and they'd weigh you, and I remember I used to hate, I don't ever weigh myself now, and if I did I wouldn't care. I have done it before just for instance, I'm like, oh lol, I weigh whatever. But I remember going to get my pill at uni and being really stressed because she weighed me, and it was a time before I worked out and I was really conscious about weight, and it really upset me because I didn't know what, and I don't know what relevance that had to me getting the pill anyway, but at that time they do your blood pressure, take your weight, whatever. But I don't know how much relevance weight really has now that we know, I guess, a bit more about body composition and stuff. Like, is weight a necessary thing to measure at every consultation that you have?
It's such a hard question.
That's not important. I'm just genuinely interested.
No, I know. So, and it is something that I am quite passionate about this as well, and trying to work out how do we take the good that the Health at Every Size movement has done, which and it has done a lot of good, but how do we at the same time recognize that at the extremes of size it is possible to be unhealthy, be that severely underweight or be that severely overweight, but the problem is there's a much wider range of healthy than people are willing to, than doctors are willing to admit, and also people are aware of. And so if we don't fit in that small bracket of what we automatically think of as that's a healthy weight, that looks great, then we automatically think we're unhealthy, and there's definitely a wider range. But I think we've sometimes gone the other way.
I struggle a lot with this, especially after like the Tess Holliday cover. So I wasn't going to comment on that. You obviously saw all this stuff. And I did end up commenting on it.
Yeah, I commented on it.
I only did because there were white, muscly, male personal trainers commenting on her health. And I thought, in this very instance, she's an overweight woman, and realistically, your job is to stay fit and healthy, one of the most privileged parts of society. Your job as a personal trainer, don't ostracize people for being fat. Like, she is fat, everyone knows that. The cover wasn't about whether or not she's healthy.
No, neither was the piece in the magazine.
Exactly, and whether or not, when you put in a very skinny model, which is that argument, you get annoyed, and it's like, but they have done 4 years, put very, very, very underweight women on magazines, and no one's really batting an eyelid, especially not if they're a celebrity figure. She's not a model for the sake of being a model, she is like a personality. So that whole thing annoyed me, because whilst I think that her weight could impact her size, there is the argument that sometimes it's the commentary around it that's more of a problem than the acknowledgement. It's like the fact that I didn't think there's a slim white woman that was my place either to talk about it. So when it was like these slim white person, I mean, I don't know what yours was a different angle. Theirs was like vilifying it. And I was like, you're just doing this for clickbait. All you're doing is capitalising or commenting on women's bodies, which is happening enough already. And I got their point of view, but I felt like that's the problem. That's why we need the Health at Every Size initiative. But on the flip side, I skirt around. I don't talk about anything a lot on Instagram, really, to do. I feel like I can't even say if you wanted to lose weight because you wanted to lose weight for a health. I feel like I can't even say that.
Well, it's problematic.
Yeah.
I took it from a slightly different angle as to I saw, and I bought the magazine because I wanted to know. I was like, I understand some of the negative connotations that comes with her in the health in quotes community because of some of the things that she said about at her size, it doesn't mean that she's unhealthy. And I get that. But at the same time, there is evidence that at somebody of her size continuing that way, she might be unhealthy. But in one way, who cares?
Exactly.
That's completely up to her. And their argument is, yes, but she's promoting it and saying people should also be that size. And, and I don't know. And so I'm not here to comment on that. What I was trying to say was her article was about her being a model. Her article was about her story. She had some really amazing female empowerment stories in that article around all sorts of difficult topics. And it wasn't anything to do with her size. She wasn't there going, I'm overweight and I'm healthy, you should be overweight too. That wasn't the point.
No.
So I basically just said, look, we've got massively overweight male rappers
right.
on the front of magazines.
All the time.
And no one cares about that. Yeah. And people were like, oh yes, but they're promoting their music and she's promoting her health. And I'm like, no, she wasn't.
Yeah,
she was promoting
is...
the fact she was a model. So just stop it.
But this is a gender argument. Again, it comes down to everything. It's really funny. Nothing is... Alice Living actually posted today, and it was talking about how there's a new initiative to get rid of junk food adverts on trains, and the question she was posing, like, is this going to do anything, like, what's the problem, blah blah blah. But the real issue with all of these things is, oh, I think they said it was to stop the impending time ticking bomb of childhood obesity or something. But the real problem that we've got is that obesity and any other ill health isn't the cause of what where we've gone wrong in society. It's a symptom of lack of education, which always fundamentally comes down to inequality, whether that's like we need redistribution of wealth or whether
Massively.
It's gender inequality. But everything, we try and like cover things up. It's a bit like plastering over a hole rather than filling it in. And I think we start like talk about these surface area problems. Yes, obesity might be a big problem, but the reasons behind that are a lot deeper than some. It's not because some woman's on the cover of a magazine.
Yeah, huge. You're not going to fix the problem by taking sugar out of cereals.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you might. I mean, you touched on the health inequality stuff. It's a huge topic, and it's so hard. And I, as a self-proclaimed middle class white man, I struggle with it because I don't feel the need to justify where I was born and how I was grown up, but at the same time I do feel I need to recognize the privileges that I've had. And so I know, just from a health perspective, for example, if you are born so two things. One, if you have more money, you tend to live longer, irrelevant of your size. And secondly, if you're born in the south of England, you tend to live longer than if you're born in the north of England, irrelevant of money. So if you earn the same amount of money and you live in Manchester, you will live shorter life than if you earn the same amount of money and you live in Cornwall.
So interesting.
And it's crazy. And you're kind of going, so, you know, there's so many reasons for that. So many reasons.
That's
and
the
it's,
thing.
Is that access to this? Is that access to this food? Is that access to this exercise? Is that air pollution? Is that this? Is that that? And it's huge. And yet all we're going is sugar.
Yeah, and I think
that'll fix the problem. It's like, no, it won't.
Yeah.
It won't fix the problem. It might be helpful to consider, but in the right way, in a way that's not demonizing food groups, in a way that's not making people afraid of stuff. You know,
there's two things I thought is really interesting, because it's only in the last like couple of years I've had this whole 180 of understanding where, first of all, we, like you just said, health is affected by air pollution, access to outside air. There's so many things that affect your health that have got fuck all to do with, one, what you look like, and two, how much you can bench. However, we have
not very much,
those
by the way,
things.
To clarify.
No, me neither. Actually, my legs are much stronger. But we put those things at the forefront. So when I first got into health and fitness, obviously I was going to believe that the leaner you were, the more shredded you were, the healthier you were. It's only now that I've come round to understanding that actually someone put it to me so well once. She said, like, we get annoyed at people that are overweight and we say like, oh, but why can't you just buy vegetables? It's so much cheaper for your family or whatever. But in a world where we have so much disparity of wealth, like even if you don't think you're that well off, if you're listening to this, the likelihood is you're probably in the 10% of the world. Like the rest of the people are living in a
You've got
basic
time
poverty.
To listen to a podcast and not do your second job to feed your kids.
So when you think about maybe there's a single mother and your mum might be able to buy you a Christmas present, or you might be able to go on holiday, but if a single mum can't give anything to her kids and she just wants to give them a piece of luxury and a happy meal is a pound, that is a very easy way that a mother or someone can provide for their family something that feels like a bit of luxury. And if that is the only way that you can, in a capitalist society which we do live in, which is based off of consumerism and taking in, and then how can we really get annoyed at these people? Because as I was saying, it's a symptom. A lot of people, and again, this is a generalization, but a lot of people who do suffer from ill health are the people who have been more fucked over in society, are from a worse background, are don't have that advantages. So it is a privilege to be able to take care of your health, which is why it's such a redundant argument to be so vilifying of people who, that argument, if you cost the NHS so much money.
Yeah.
And it's like, the people who are the healthiest that are saying this probably aren't using the NHS anyway.
No, not
the people that need it are the people
that... Not
until
they're 80 and they get cancer
because
they've lived so long.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
So the people who cost the NHS a lot of money are the people who need to use it. I know it sounds weird, but I guess that's kind of...
Yeah. I mean, something that makes a story and a piece of research that makes me so at the same time so confused but also so excited about the fact that we're learning more and more stuff, was a piece of research looking at smoking that was done a while back. And I'm sure you would agree with me as well. Smoking is unhealthy. Like, it's something we know, right? Smoking, bad for your health.
That, like, being said, I did used to smoke like 20 a day, but I don't anymore, but I did.
But it's, we have endless amount of research to say that smoking is bad for you. Smoking increases your risk of lung cancer, increases your risk of bladder cancer, increases your risk of cervical cancer, all sorts of things. There are loads of things that it does, and it's bad for you. No one would sit down and argue that it's not. However, this goes back to context matters, and it's so important. There are a group of people in which smoking is healthy for them. And I know you give me that look, but it's weird. The reason why is down to the fact that there are so many different things that affect health, not just the stuff we put on our body. So they did a look at single mothers living on estates. I don't know where exactly it was, but it was in the northern half of the UK. And they looked at the single mothers who smoked versus the single mothers who didn't. And they looked at the impact that smoking had on their stress levels.
Right.
And their overall biomarkers and their overall
appearances
of health.
Social stuff as well.
Exactly. And so what they actually found was that the single mothers who smoked were healthier overall than the single mothers that didn't.
Because it affected the way that they lived their lives in other areas.
Massively. It gave them, almost all of them worked two jobs. It gave them time to relax in between, during their jobs. It gave them 5 minutes to relax during the shift. And we know stress is a massive, massively important thing for health. It gave them a social aspect of being able to communicate and meet up with other people who also smoked. And that, we know that social connectivity is hugely important for health as well. That then had a knock-on effect of them being able to sleep, because they've had time, they've had less stress during the day, they're able to sleep better. And so actually, if you took those people at a GP surgery, for example, if they came in and you went, "Oh, you're we should refer you to a stop smoking service," because that seems the right thing to do, right? Like, smoking is bad.
But then I guess just to caveat this, the level of health perhaps that those they had still wasn't like a very high level of health.
No, of
afterwards.
Course.
So this, but, going the other way, like,
yeah, yeah.
It's not
so
to
I'm not
say,
saying
don't,
that you should
say take up smoking, yeah.
But what I'm saying is it's really important to make sure that we're not dogmatic about these things, where we go, smoking is bad for you. Everyone that I see that is smoking, I need to tell to stop. So being overweight is bad for you. Everyone I see that's overweight, I need to tell them to eat less. Probably not.
I think like that other thing though, of like, I remember seeing something where it's like, if someone smokes and they have lung cancer, you're not constantly going out on about how bad their lungs are. You try and tell them to stop smoking. Hmm. Whereas when people are overweight, I think there's a massive onus just to keep going, you're really fat. And it's like, well, don't mention. I think there's studies to show that people do much better in, if they have health implications caused by their weight, they're much less likely to be able to lose weight if the doctor doesn't mention their weight but mentions the lifestyle factors that affects the way that they put on weight or lose weight. And I know that sounds so blatantly obvious and simple, but a lot of the time people will go to the doctor and the doctor will go, well, you need to lose weight. And to the layperson, as you just said, and I know, it's really hard to lose weight if you have no idea what you're doing.
And what's the first thing you do? You open a magazine
and read,
or you open Instagram and you go, oh, okay, I'll cut carbs.
Yeah.
See if that works.
Exactly. So then I think that that's really interesting if we look at lifestyle factors. So that's coming on to, let's talk a bit about what you do on Instagram then. What do you find you're coming up at loggerheads most frequently, or what's the thing that kind of gets you the most, the biggest lie? I mean, there's so many out there.
There are a lot. At the moment, over the last month, I think the main thing has been all of the different things that people claim can cure cancer. Whether that be a vegan diet cures cancer, whether that be eating cranberries cures cancer. There are all sorts of things. Whether that be, and this was literally yesterday or the day before, whether that be wearing a bra with underwire in it causes cancer.
I've seen that before.
Oh,
that's been a thing before.
It's so upsetting. And the problem is that, just to touch on very briefly, because I know this might sound boring for some people, but how research works. Research is done to try and figure something out, is to try and look at correlations between things and try and get enough research that we can make an accurate assumption of causation.
Yes.
The problem is that whenever you do research, you're always going to have
some
results on both sides of the situation. So if I took if I took a coin and did a piece of research where I flipped it 100 times, I may get heads 80 times. And so my research might say that this coin is more likely to flip heads than tails.
Yeah.
We know that's not true because it's 50-50. But looking at one piece of research, you might be convinced that you know, flipping a coin gives you heads. And so you look at one piece of research wearing bras with underwire, and you might be convinced that they cause cancer.
Yeah.
Because you've seen a link and you're like, oh, okay. The problem is that we need lots of pieces of research to even that out, so that if we have, say, 100 studies looking at flipping a coin, we will. The more studies we have, the closer and closer and closer we'll get to the real answer, which is 50-50. And so whenever we look at one study, that's the problem, is that people will make these claims and they'll grab one study and go, see, look, science proves I'm right. And you're going, but that's really poor evidence. I can do a study that will show whatever I want if I do it enough times. And we need, it doesn't mean we can't trust research, but it means we need to trust people that know how to look at research.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying earlier about, I think that I'm quite well placed to be able to critically analyze stuff like this, because I understand that one piece of research doesn't solve the problem. It needs a much wider breadth of knowledge and a number of pieces of research and studies.
Well, it's a bit like what you were saying about the smoking thing. I maybe remember reading something explaining, it might have been Hazel Wallace who shared this, but it was explaining how to read research and things. Mm. And she was saying how there could be a study, say in the Daily Mail, that said women who drank orange juice were much less likely to get cancer or whatever. But if you look deeper into the study, women who bought freshly squeezed orange juice or whatever it was will be from a higher socioeconomic background. Women who have freshly squeezed orange juice for breakfast were more likely to go to the gym. Women who blah, blah, blah. So whilst, as you say, you take one piece of evidence in a very nuanced conversation and go, that's why, when realistically, if you spread that out and look at all the other factors, there'll be a whole other reason.
Exactly.
Which is why when we look at health again, it makes so much sense to not go, oh, you're overweight, you're unhealthy. You may be unhealthy and overweight, but we can't say that those two things directly impact each other. And I remember reading that and being like, oh, that is so helpful. I just don't know why. But I mean, that isn't that sexy to talk about. That isn't going to sell papers.
And it also doesn't make an Instagram square.
Yeah.
Right? It's really hard to explain that stuff.
Really hard. Well, I mean, you do quite well with your, you've got that kind of, you've got a really good narrative on your page where it is quite obvious and people start to get it. Do you get people that are quite kind of affronted, or is everyone quite behind you? How do you find it?
No, I do. Well, obviously everyone's in their own bubble, right? So the people that follow me agree with me most
of
the time.
Yeah.
I did, however, annoy a few people with my post about bone broth. because, and also vitamins and supplements. So those two have annoyed people that follow me.
What was wrong with the bone broth?
Well, the bone broth, there's nothing wrong with it. But what I've been seeing recently is a lot of people, I personally think it's a fad, and people got annoyed at me using that word.
Right.
But essentially, bone broth is stock.
Yeah.
Cooked for slightly longer. And the problem is that stock is great for you. Like, it's a great way to, if we're talking health economics as well, it's a great way to create more meals out of a whole chicken, for example. You can
less
boil
waste.
The bones up, you can make stock, you can use it for soup the next day. It's great. It does have some nutrients in it as well. It's great for hydration, for people that don't necessarily drink enough water. You know, it's all this kind of stuff. So yes, it's great. Drink soup, make stock, make bone broth or whatever you want to call it. That's fine. However, the problem I had was that people, and the problem I do have, is that people are starting to make random health claims about it.
I think that's been around forever, though. Maybe the reason you touched on it isn't bone broth rather than a fad, a wives' tale. Hasn't that been around forever? Something about bones.
Well, chicken noodle soup has like cures everything, and that's basically stock.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a thing. But the problem is that it's become, over the last month, it's become an Instagram thing.
Oh, they're loving it. I haven't
people,
seen that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I follow the people, so you don't have to. That's what I say.
That is really funny.
So don't always look at who I'm following and follow them as well, because sometimes I'm following people deliberately
to see the other side of things,
that I can correct it. Because
I know that people
follow all sorts of people without realizing.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things that's been going around a lot is collagen. And how collagen, if you eat collagen, your skin will be better, your hair will be better, your joints will be better, you'll fix your arthritis.
This,
And so people are saying, because bone broth has collagen in it, because you're boiling down bones and the collagen comes and all this kind of stuff, that it's really healthy. And therefore, bone broth will improve your skin health. And it
has
will
this
improve
turned
your bone.
Into any brand selling bone broth yet? Has that happened?
Yeah, there are lots of brands
selling
bone broth.
Oh, are there?
Yeah, loads of them. There are loads. You can buy, just like kombucha used to just be something people would make themselves, right. And now it's a massive industry where people sell kombucha. You can go and buy it from Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
Other brands are available. you can buy bone broth now.
Yeah.
More in America than the UK, but I'm pretty sure you can buy it here too. But the problem is, I don't have any problem with people drinking bone broth at all, or stock, or whatever you want to call it. What I have a problem with is people worsening their relationship with food by believing things that aren't true, and therefore using those beliefs to change what they choose to buy and consume. People can drink bone broth, people can drink stock, they can make soup out of it. That's great. But if the only reason you're doing it is because you think it's going to make your skin health better, that's not evidence-based and it's not true. And if you're more likely to believe that, you're more likely to believe the other stuff. And I know it's a possible extrapolation, but there are so many stories about people believing alternative therapies for cancer and stopping the therapies that we as doctors know work. And people die because of the fact that they believe someone about an alkaline diet, for example.
Which is not a thing. You can't change your body's pH balance.
You can't. It's physically impossible. When people are really sick and they come into hospital, the majority of the time the pH of their blood is either acidic or alkalotic, and it's one way or the other. And that's when people are really ill. If they're not ill, it doesn't change. There are lots of really complicated mechanisms in our body that keep our pH between 7.35 and 7.45. When people are unwell, if I could just give them kale and change their pH back to normal, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Doctors aren't hiding this secret. Like, it's, we're not hiding it to make money from you. Like, and especially not in this country, because we don't make money from you anyway.
You don't get paid anything.
It doesn't work. We can't just give people in ITU, in intensive care, drinks, you know, green smoothies and an alkaline diet. It's just not a thing.
Yeah.
And people are being told it's a thing, and people are being told that it was cure cancer, and people are stopping chemotherapy treatment to go on alkaline diets because it feels better. And of course it does, because chemotherapy makes you feel horrible, but so does cancer. You're dying.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it the reason why, and people asked me people had a go at me the other day about the underwire bra thing, and saying, so what? Who cares if people are choosing not to wear bras? I'm like, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the more you believe the stuff that's not true, the more likely you are to believe the stuff that will end up really harming you. And we need to be addressing it from the easy points first. If I go and only address alkaline diets, I'm missing out
thing as well, because not everyone believes that. But it's like, I used to believe, although I can't remember, I'm going to say this now and I can't remember if it's been disproved, but I remember everyone used to go on about eggs and how you could eat the cholesterol in the eggs.
Yeah.
And I remember this nutritionist, Rhiannon, who I really like, everyone used to go on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I always eat eggs. And after a while I was like, can you just tell me? And she was like, no, you can't eat the cholesterol. It doesn't work like that. Hmm. The cholesterol in a food doesn't naturally transfer to your cholesterol in your body.
So we thought it did. We used to think it did. And the research that was done initially around dietary cholesterol seemed to suggest that heart disease was linked to it. And there are reasons for that.
Right.
And they're very complicated reasons.
But looking
at more research, we now know that dietary, and there's another thing that got people annoyed on my page recently, dietary cholesterol doesn't directly correlate to blood cholesterol. There is some evidence that it can in some people, and it's about a third of people. It's not everyone either. About two-thirds of people aren't affected at all. A third of people, their overall cholesterol levels might go up slightly from eating a lot of dietary cholesterol, but it doesn't go up in a ratio that's necessarily harmful, for one, because there's lots of nuance. This is the thing about medicine, is people just go, cholesterol, it's bad for you. And actually, there's a whole load of research into cholesterol. There's different types of cholesterol. There's different types that are actually protective for us. Our body makes cholesterol every day. Our liver makes cholesterol, but we don't think our liver's going to kill us, but we think eggs are going to.
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of things that make it really complicated and make my job difficult because I can't explain all this stuff every single time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Basically, eggs aren't the devil that we used to think it was. Mm. The what the health excuse for a documentary that was on Netflix that said that it was as bad for you as smoking 5 cigarettes a day is utter bullcrap.
But also that was made in America where their food regulations are completely different from the
UK. But also it was all about cholesterol in food. It's still, even with different regulations, it's the same lie. It's the same untruth. And it gave vegans a bad name everywhere. If you want to be vegan, that's fine. I massively respect your ethical decisions and your morals, and I'm not there yet. But I don't appreciate when people use lies to sell an agenda.
Well, that's about to say the worst thing of everything, I think the thing about it is it's the morality that we put on food. That's the real issue. It's about the fact that people are making choices based on the fact that certain foods are seen as good or bad, whether that's like because they're good because they're low carb, low sugar, make you skinnier, make your skin better, whatever. The fact is that foods don't have a moral identity. We impose this, and then you have people going, I mean, it's just everywhere. Oh, I'm so naughty. I ate this and it's bad. That narrative, that language is what perpetuates so many problems with food, both sides of it. People becoming obese and people becoming anorexic. Either way, in this Western world that we live in, where we
people
do have an abundance
their
of
food.
Yeah, that relationship with food fundamentally is, and when you think about it, when sometimes I talk about food and I actually feel awful because we're so much privileged with food, we have so much food that we're able to literally starve ourselves or binge eat. And in the grand scheme of things, that is gross when you think about the way that food is in the world. But on a very small scale, it's also just one of the biggest issues that we have, like that understanding of food. Sorry, did you want to?
Well, I don't know how to follow that. we're going back to inequality again. Yeah. I massively agree. It's just.
With the moral compass on food, do you think that's good, bad?
Yeah, well, definitely. I think people are. I mean, you see it on Instagram all the time, right? You see people talk about bad carbs and good carbs. And, there's a classic one that happens all the time about like healthy food swaps.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, like, swap this for that. And you're going, okay, great. I mean, in the small minutiae, maybe that one has slightly more nutrients than the other one, but does that make you healthy? Because you refuse to eat full fat milk and you just drink semi-skim milk? Like, that's rubbish.
Yeah.
That's not true. We need fat too. Like, if people are drinking gallons and gallons of it and they switch it, they might end up losing weight because they've got less calories now.
Yeah.
But that's got nothing to do with the fact that it was full fat milk.
This is the funny thing about calories. I remember when I always used to cut out carbs and I always craved sugar. And because I didn't know that glucose is carbs and that's what it all was, I would just constantly think I just wanted sweets. But it was because I never ate carbs. I literally would just eat, which I thought was better to cut out carbs. It wasn't, because then I would eat sweets, which would add up to more calories than the carbs that I should have been eating, but for some reason had decided were really bad for me. And that really basic fundamental understanding of what foods are actually made of, and when you're having a craving, there's probably a reason. You probably need it. There's probably a reason why you feel like I really want sugar. You probably need some carbs. But whereas instead you get Instagrammers being like, if you fancy a cookie, you can just make kale. And you're like,
they say it in that voice as well. No, they do.
and I think what we're about to get onto,
you're not strong enough to curb your cravings.
Yes,
right? You just need
it's
to
that
be
moral
stronger.
Thing again.
Yeah,
I used to think this when I was younger, though.
You need to just, you know, it's all about willpower.
Yes, but I remember thinking when I was younger that I didn't have enough willpower to be anorexic, and that really annoyed me. I remember thinking, I can't starve myself. Why can't I do that? I'm not good enough. Why can't I not eat? Everyone else seems to.
That's so twisted.
Isn't it so twisted? But back then as well, when I was like 13, 14, I don't even think that would have been a bad thing to say. I don't think anyone would have been worried about that. Women were literally told not to eat. No one was. Now it's almost worse now because we dress it up.
Nothing feels as good as skinny.
Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. Oh. And back then, in those days,
that was accepted. No one challenged that. I think people thought it was an awesome quote. Put it on T-shirts.
Exactly. But that's what I mean. So back then, people were literally going, yeah, eat less. Whereas now people are saying eat less, but they're pretending it's about health.
Yeah.
Actually, what they're doing is, it's this very basic argument that I do think people are getting now. It's calories in versus calories out. All that matters, it doesn't matter what you're eating, it's how, if it's about losing weight, it's
in the short term,
it doesn't matter. it doesn't matter. But what the worrying thing is sometimes with Instagram, the clean eating fad, was people were making it moral worse about, like, this food's good, this food's bad, blah blah blah, but all they're saying fundamentally at the end of the day is exactly the same thing: eat less. which is fine if you know that's what they're saying, but if you're not, it dresses it up in a way that kind of might make it a bit more damaging because you don't actually realize that's what you're doing. My mum to this day will go, "You eat so much," really worried that I'm eating so much food, as if that's like an awful thing, when actually what I eat, it's really healthy, but even it shouldn't matter how much you eat. Her understanding of food is so,
or nutrient dense,
exactly. I eat a lot of nutrient dense foods, but I also eat less nutrient dense, more calorie dense foods as well. But I will eat, I like food, so I eat a lot. And she's looking at my plate of, it could be like butternut squash and loads of veg and aubergine, but it's piled high. And to her, because it's loads of food, she would look at that and be like, that must be a million calories, I can't believe it. Whereas she might look at something that was less nutrient dense, more calorie dense, but was smaller and be like, oh, that's good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, we've just been taught such weird things about food.
We have. And I think that links on to something that I get asked as well about, is calorie counting a good idea? And everything that we do is problematic.
Yeah.
It can be problematic. And my main response to that sometimes has been, for me, it helped me learn about that stuff. It helped me learn about calorie density of foods. It helped me learn about nutrient density of foods that I had no idea about. But I, at the time of doing it, I was in the right place mentally. I had the right motivation to want to lose weight at that point. So I haven't mentioned this, but the reason, I personally think the reason why I ended up succeeding at what I believe to be a healthier weight for me, is because of the fact that I wanted to do it to be a better doctor, not about my appearance anymore.
Right.
So I ended up getting to a point, massively. I ended up getting to a point 2 years after graduating where I didn't feel comfortable mentioning weight to patients because I felt like a hypocrite myself.
Right, that's really interesting.
It was almost like, let's say you're going to a stop smoking service, and as you're walking in, you see someone smoking loads outside, and then 10 minutes later, that person walks in and is the person running your service.
Yeah.
You're not going to believe them. No. You're not going to listen to a thing they say. You're like, hang on, but you're smoking yourself. What are you doing telling me to stop smoking?
Yeah.
So I felt the same way, that I felt like if I was, and some of that was based on what I thought unhealthy was, and so that's perhaps a longer conversation. But I felt like if I was unhealthy myself in the size that I was, that if my job as a doctor was to try and help people's health, there were going to be situations that came along where I needed to mention weight and food, and therefore I couldn't do it. So I was like, I need to sort this out. I need to lose weight because I'm limiting my ability as a doctor. And so it really changed from and some of that I'm ugly was still there.
Yeah.
But it was a lesser focus now. It was more just like, hang on, I want to be a better doctor. And so I started doing it from that perspective, which I think put me in a right mind frame to be able to do this kind of stuff. And I would say it doesn't necessarily mean you have to wait to find the right mind frame. I think I was really lucky and privileged to have that change in mindset. You can get there along the way, but it is important to try and figure out a reason why that's not because I'm ugly or because I'm not attractive.
100% agree. And I think the interesting thing about calorie counting is you're completely right. It's so contextual. If we didn't have this social conditioning around food, I actually don't think, and we didn't have this weird thing about numbers, like a woman should be, how many times they say in the press that Kim Kardashian is 116 pounds. What is 116 pounds? I don't even know.
But I'm really lucky. I've never heard that.
I'm always.
Now I know.
Literally all the time. And
does
I remember,
she never change? Is that every day?
I don't know. But like whenever she's that way, I almost think she must pay them to put it in. It's very weird. But I remember when I was younger, I thought you had to be 7 stone. And then it was 8 stone. And then I remember I hadn't weighed myself for ages. And there's these really random numbers.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm weighing myself, I'm 5'3", my friend who's 6'1", we all believed you had to be the same weight. Makes no sense. I believe if this weird conditioning wasn't there, calorie count, not necessarily calorie counting, but macro tracking or whatever, wouldn't actually be that much of an issue, because everyone could just be like, oh, it would be useful for me personally to have this much, I'll have that much.
And it's not a lifelong thing, right?
No.
So something that might help people listening, I every so often I do it, but I stopped deliberately about a month ago. I was working with someone who I kind of wanted to try and improve my gym stuff, so it was a separate reason for doing it, but I kind of just stopped contacting him, and I should probably message him and tell him sorry, but essentially I was like I'm under a lot of stress at work, and the stress is increasing, and if I continue to try and track my food, I'm going to explode. It's just not going to work. And so even myself, who people look at and go, oh, you've got such a great relationship with food now. I'm like, yeah, but this was context dependent.
Mm.
Like, I got to this point where, yeah, I can track food and it not affect my relationship with food. But at that moment in time, it was starting to affect it. And I realized that and I went, absolutely not. I need to stop. So I stopped counting my calories and I just went back to eating as intuitively as I could. And I've done that for the last month. And yeah, on the scales, I've put some weight on, but who cares? Like, it's not the point. And the point was, I took the rest of my health into consideration. I went, I'm at a really stressful point in my job. If I continue to do this, it's going to start being harmful for me. And even though I've got this good relationship now, or so it appears on the outside, it's still important to keep to just that's why the whole dogmatic thing doesn't work. People going, calorie counting is the only way you can do it. You have to. It's like, for some people it might work. Even for me, a month ago, it was a bad idea.
Yeah,
it's just,
I mean,
so important to recognize that.
I haven't tracked calories for years and I wouldn't go back to doing it again. But I remember when I got into fitness at that point in time, it was the only thing that was available. Everyone was like, you have to. And it was really revolutionary as well. And everyone thought it was a really, because it was, if it fixed my macros as well, a lot of that was going on. So it was very early stages of trying to unpick the narrative around good and bad foods.
Mm.
However, now that I've not tracked for ages and realised that actually life is so much easier. And if anything, I actually eat better because I'm not thinking about food so much that I literally will go and just eat. Whereas before, I would be so conscious of what I ate that it might end up in me overeating and undereating. It was very, very calculated, literally and metaphorically. And now it's just not an issue. I am intuitive. That has taken me literally years, though, when you think about this time frame of this, to get
here. And again,
here,
from a privileged perspective, we're both in a body size that people would probably look at from the outside and say, yeah, but you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't always.
No, of course, neither was I.
Yes, exactly.
But
so,
to clarify that, we weren't. And yeah, now, like, I think that's why intuitive eating is really important. And I think it's important that people look at it as a really valid method. It is very much against anything to do with calorie tracking.
Yeah.
But as a method, I think it's great. And there are going to be some situations where it's really important to start learning to listen to your body.
Yes,
well, not some situations, all situations. Yeah. We need to be better at eating intuitively, massively.
And I think there's also this idea that, so I don't even, because I've been very, very competitive lean, I don't look at myself as lean. I know my body so well to know that this is a very comfortable place for me to sit. But obviously, that depends on, someone smaller than me might think I'm big, someone bigger than me might think I'm absolutely tiny, depending on where you're looking at it. So I'll still get messages from people going, because I'm in a fitness industry, they will automatically assume that I don't eat certain things, that I definitely track my food, that I don't drink. And I'm like, why do you think that my body, we've almost made things that are attainable, people believe that unattainable. There's such weird narratives around what health looks like and how you achieve it.
My surgical consultant the other day joked that I didn't want cake, did I? And I was like, what do you mean? Give me the cake.
Yeah.
I want cake. I don't care it's 11 a.m. Give me cake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you won't post it on Instagram. I was like, yeah, no, I will. This is the whole point. You don't follow my Instagram. You just sort that out. But I was like, this is the whole point. Like, that you can eat cake. It's not, nothing's out of boundaries.
No.
If I only ate cake, might be a problem.
Yes.
But that's not the point.
No. I did a whole post about cake once because I have cake probably once a week. It's one of my favorite things to do with my boyfriend is go and find a new cake shop and have a slice of cake. Every time I do that, everyone absolutely loses their mind. As if I'm like, no, this is just, I really like cake and it's fun to find new cake shops. I haven't thought about it. There's been no planning. It's 11 o'clock on Tuesday.
You haven't eaten less earlier in the day to eat cake later.
Yeah, because you just learn. But I have a lot of the time got clients now, like all of my clients are women. I can train men, they just don't seem interested. And these girls come to me and the first thing they say is, I've been tracking for years and I can't stop. And they'll stop and they'll be like, just so, because I think for women it was such a big thing. And then you realise that even if you do put on a bit of weight, as you said, life's just a bit better when not everything is focused on.
Oh, no, even for men it's stressful, I promise.
Yeah.
It's stressful no matter what sex you are. Tracking everything you eat is stressful because,
and it's a luxury as well.
Yeah.
It takes time,
you have to have the time for it. I was like, I'm still privileged. I'm still, you know, middle class, I work as a doctor, you know, I have a full time job. But I'm still finding it too stressful to do that right now.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I can only imagine what it's like for people that are not that way and you tell them that they need to start tracking everything you eat.
Yeah.
Like, it takes time.
I think the fundamental thing of what's coming out of this that we're basically trying to say. Yeah, but also it's just that everything comes down to the fact that food shouldn't be as complicated as what everyone is trying to do. It's the same with anything in the world, is market it, make it into a business, turn it into something that's packageable and sellable and printable and article lineable.
Buy my meal plan.
Yeah, there is no such thing. It's just eating. We need to take it back to the realization that we're like sustaining ourselves. We're human, living, walking, breathing beings. The fact that we have prescribed this idea of beauty, which very frequently reduces people to not be able to do a lot of things because they feel like they literally can't eat, is not natural or healthy.
And if we repair our relationship with food that way first, the other stuff becomes so much easier and so much less problematic.
Yeah.
If we repair our relationship with food, using calories for 2-3 months to perhaps lose some weight, if need be, for health or for an operation or for whatever, that then becomes a lot more a lot less problematic because you've looked at your relationship with food first. And that's the reason why I don't post meals with calorie counts on them anymore.
No,
I used to.
I can't believe you did that either, because it was so redundant.
And I used to look at I used to look at cooking books and go, why aren't they posting the calories?
Yeah,
that's really unhelpful. When I make a cookbook, I'll have calories in it.
But also, like, you'd get people posting stuff with calories, and it would be a girl, and she'd post one meal in the day, and it would be like 960. And you'd think, fuck, she eats loads. And then you get someone else posting one meal out of their day that was 300 calories. Now, that information is so unhelpful, because yes, she might have eaten one meal for 906 calories, but that might be the only thing she ate all day. But it creates the illusion, because we automatically in our minds think they're eating three meals a day, they must eat that many calories. People lie. There was a massive stage on Instagram, I remember, you'd see these girls literally bullshit. There's no way they were eating 3,500 calories a day and staying at 14% body fat. But at one point in time, there was like a, it was like a currency to kind of be like, I eat so much food. It's always been around, actually. There's always pictures of very skinny girls eating loads of pizza and cake, and that's not helpful.
Well, there's pictures of them holding large pieces of pizza and cake. How much of that they eat after the photo's been taken?
Or if they're eating, are they eating anything else? Not that I want to vilify any women out there, but it's just that if you saw a fat person with a slice of pizza, everyone would be like, you're disgusting, what are you doing? Let's stop attaching these kind of like either sexually gratifying or like vulgar ideas between food and people. It's just food. But so I think that was what's really unhelpful, and everyone would do these what I eat in a day. But what I eat in a day, it's like all the other things that we've been talking about. Contextually, what you ate on one day out of 365 days of the year, not useful.
No,
because it could be completely,
it's context, it's what you're trying to do at that time. It's it's you at the moment, it's how much exercise you're doing, it's your body size, your height. It's like, if you try and copy someone else, someone asked me the other day, can you tell us what you eat in a day?
Oh,
and
God,
I replied back and I just went, no, because if I tell you, you'll copy it, and I don't want you to copy
but
it.
I also don't know what I eat in a day.
It's not helpful.
No,
like, it's like, can you post what you buy at the supermarket? I'm like, I used to.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And actually,
it's not as bad, so
there's
quite useful to look at what ingredients you can have.
People are asking that, like, oh well, for a certain amount of money I want to kind of have an idea as to what kind of health, you know, like nutrient dense foods you buy and stuff. It's like, fine, but the other thing is, there will be some people who will just copy it.
Yeah,
and they'll just be like, oh, I need to buy this many heads of broccoli this week because he buys that much. And it's, we want to copy each other far too much, because we think if we copy each other, we will look like each other.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work like that.
No, and I think that's the problem with why, well, it's why fitness influencers are such a big thing. It's why I managed to get into it. When I was really lean, like very lean, I had absolutely shredded abs. Now, genetically, my sister, she did do sport, but she never does exercise. She's a doctor. It's quite funny. She literally never goes. She should go to the gym, just because I think it's really good for you to exercise.
It's great for health. Yeah.
It's. I don't actually exercise for anything to do with what I look like now. Exercise is literally for mindset. If I ever thought I wanted to lose weight, the thing I would adjust is my food, because I can't. If, does that make sense? Like, I'm always going to exercise, irrelevant of what's going on in my life. It's like a hobby.
As I know, Shona's been on your podcast.
Yeah.
As well, but as she said, there's 99 reasons to exercise, and weight loss is not one of
them.
Yeah,
exactly.
It doesn't have to be.
No.
There's so many other good reasons to
you
exercise.
You should just do it. But she, if she's in a bikini, pretty much has abs. Our family is very like genetically athletic and sporty, and everyone would be like, still to this day, I have abs. I don't train abs. Everyone's like, what do you do? I want to know. I could sell an ab guide and probably make quite a lot of money.
Yeah, if you
wanted
to.
It would be such a waste of time, because if you're not predisposed, like genetically predisposed to have abs, it's probably not going to happen. But we do this with bum guides and whatever else it is. But it's so prescriptive. It doesn't work like that. Find the best way to be the healthiest you. And you honestly, when you're your happiest, you probably, you know, when you get into a new relationship, and you start putting on weight, but you're just so happy with that person, the last thing you care about is whether or not you look fat. Maybe after a few months you're like, fuck, I've put on a bit of weight, whatever. But at that moment of happiness, you will realise that what you look like or how fat you are really has no bearing on how your life is. I think a lot of the time, though, because of the way the world's set up, when you are feeling down, the first thing you do is think, how can I change my looks? You break up with a boyfriend, you get a haircut. You feel a bit shit in job, you try and lose weight. But isn't it funny that we just immediately go to that answer when actually, realistically, look after your health. It's a bit like the thing of looking after the pennies and the pounds look after themselves. Yeah. It's that with food and fitness.
But I think the more we realise what impacts our health aside from nutrition, the more we realise that, the better I think we're going to have with those kind of things.
Yeah.
The more we realise that sleep, the more we realise that exercise, that social connectivity, actually having friendships and spending time with other people.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, if you don't sort those three out, you can eat as well as you like, but you're not going to be healthy.
No, I wrote a blog, actually, an article for this new paper called like Drugstore Culture, and it's online. So can you write a piece for us about like what self-care really is? And I was like, I cannot fucking wait. Really long piece. And basically all I talk about at the end, I'm like, so the things that you need to do, I talk about all the things on Instagram, the way that the health industry in the UK has gone from like millions to billions, all this stuff. And I'm like, so what you got to do, drink water, eat a nice varied diet, sleep 8 hours, read Matthew Walker's Why We Need to Sleep, have sex, have friends, do social activities, you're done. That is it. It doesn't cost anything if you're from a privileged background and have access to these things. But realistically, to have good health, it's not at all about what gym kit you're wearing, which gym you go to. You can go outside, run for free, try and source locally sourced vegetables, try and make friends with people that are nearby. We are humans. It's all very tribal. It's a lot more basic than Instagram might have you believe. And I think that's what's missing. I think we went so far into this portal of trying to find health that we completely forgot that we've just got to move and eat and act like we were designed to. Does that make sense? Just looking at me.
I'm soaking it in. Okay.
So last thing we'll do actually before we go, can you tell me, I've never done this before, but I've just decided,
okay,
kind of like a quick fry round, what is the things that everyone can avoid that's absolutely obvious bullshit? So for
okay,
instance,
detox.
You can't
detox your body with food or drink. Not a thing. Your liver does it, your kidneys do it. You can help them by eating a varied diet. You can help them by helping your body work in general better, but there is no specific thing that will detox your liver or your kidneys. And if medical medium ever listens to this, you're a charlatan. You need to stop promoting crap.
So all detox teas.
Yeah, rubbish. Absolute bullshit. Stop wasting your money. You cannot cure cancer with any particular diet.
Yeah.
It's not a thing. Again, you can make your body feel better if you change your diet to a more nutritious one, a more varied one. But it's not going to cure your cancer. And nothing that you do with your diet has caused cancer. That's really important to say as well.
Oh, interesting.
So you can't, because the problem is that it's not just it. People think that they can cure it by doing it. It's that people are like, oh shit, I ate too much of this in my life. That's the reason I've got breast cancer. Or it's my fault because I wore underwire bras.
So is diet never a cause of cancer?
It's a contributing factor.
If with like epigenetics and stuff, is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a contributing factor. And there are certain things. So for example, a diet massively high in red meat does increase your risk of colon cancer, but eating red meat every so often doesn't. When you, if you get colon cancer in the future, that's not going to have been the cause. And so we go too far as to start labeling problems and causes. Cancer is so massively influenced by so many different things.
What is your opinion on, and I think I know, but those DNA testing kits where it tells you what you're allergic to or what you're intolerant to?
Absolute bollocks. So food intolerance tests don't exist. The reason why you can't go to your GP and get one is because they don't exist. So the main thing that these tests are testing for is something called IgG, which is an immunoglobulin which your body makes in response to an exposure to something.
Okay.
So if you are exposed to a certain type of food, your body will make that immunoglobulin to it. The problem is, people say that means you're intolerant to it. That's not the case. All it means is that you've eaten it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're intolerant to it.
Okay.
So people are measuring something that is irrelevant. There is no evidence that that links to intolerance. And when people say, oh yes, but I got told this and I cut it out and I felt better, that's great. Doesn't mean that the test was right.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is, if you're going through your life and you're never getting any like really uncomfortable bowel movements or feeling really sick or having any actual physical symptoms of intolerance, then why are you going to look for a problem that you haven't had changing your diet based on that?
If you find certain foods that don't work well with you, you know that. You don't need a blood test to tell you. Then eat less of them.
Exactly.
And if you eat less of them and you feel better, cool.
Perfect.
Done. You don't need to tell anyone that it's bad for you or good for you to actually listen to your body and work that out.
That is one thing you do, is a massive thing that I've learned though. Like, I actually do know, I can pinpoint foods that I know I can't have too much of because it'll upset my stomach or whatever, and I've literally done that just from becoming more conscious and mindful of what I'm eating.
And that's fine.
But I still eat it all.
If someone tells you that kale is incredibly healthy for you but it doesn't work well with your body, you don't enjoy how you feel when you eat it, don't eat it.
Yeah,
it's fine.
And also,
you don't need to drink celery juice. Also not a thing. But you don't, if you don't like celery and you don't like the way it makes you feel, stop drinking it. I don't understand. You don't need to push yourself through feeling shit just because somebody told you it was healthy. Just like the keto diet and the keto flu, if people start feeling crap because they've cut out all carbs, that's a sign that perhaps you should stop it.
Yeah,
it's not something to push through with willpower.
But also the other thing that I know sounds really funny, but I sometimes feel a bit dairy intolerant, but sometimes I'm going to eat a whole tub of ice cream and it's worth it. Like, sometimes in life you just make a decision based off of feeling good.
It's not going to kill you.
No. Next up, okay, we've done detox teas. What about slimming teas?
Well, what does that even mean?
Teas that, so that you've got the detoxing ones that you say
teas
cleanse
that make
your liver,
you lose weight.
But then the weight loss teas.
Yeah. Also not a thing.
No.
It's just tea.
Yeah.
They'll put things in it like capsaicin, for example, which is the stuff that's in chili peppers,
right?
That's meant to increase your metabolism. It might do by about 10 calories a day. That's irrelevant.
I remember putting loads of chili on eggs.
You can sneeze and burn 10 calories. Doesn't mean we should start sniffing pepper to lose weight. It's not a thing. So yeah, you can drink whatever tea you like, but it's not going to make you lose weight. The only thing that's going to make you lose weight is by having less energy than you're expending. It's simple biomechanics. It's simple thermodynamics, that if you have more energy going into your body than your body is using over a period of a day or a week or even a longer period of time, over that whole period, if you work it out and you're having less going in than you are spending, just like a bank account, you are going to lose weight or lose money. There are so many things that would affect that. Your gut health would affect that. There's all sorts of things, and we can make it really complicated. But by boiling it down to something simple, why would a slimming tea work? It just doesn't. I mean, I know it doesn't, but it just from someone who doesn't necessarily know how to look at research or this or that, just take what they're saying and go, does this affect my calorie balance? I'm putting something new into my body and they're telling me it's going to make me be in a deficit.
Well, it's the problem of, they all say they make you lose weight because, one, they use made up photos, but two, it makes people lose water weight because they have like diuretics and laxatives in them.
Some of them do have laxatives.
But there's like an actual danger to having laxatives like frequently, aren't there? Because you can get dependent on them.
Some of them don't even have laxatives in them. Some of them are literally just tea.
Oh.
Literally, all they are is tea and some herbal root from somewhere in the Amazon has meant to improve your metabolism. That the majority of them are actually that.
Yeah.
Some of them that do make you go to the and those tend to be the detox ones rather than the slimming ones. Actually, the detox ones tend to do that because it makes you feel
flushed,
emptied
out.
And if they are diuretics and you are having diuretics on a regular basis, you can become dehydrated, which is not great. You can lose all sorts of electrolytes in the fluid that you're losing. And there are cases of people that have become incredibly unwell and people that have died from taking laxatives. There's a reason why some people use it some people take diuretics and laxatives deliberately to try and lose weight, knowing that's what they are.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's really unhealthy and it's really dangerous.
Okay, what else is next up? What other things have you seen recently that killed you?
Keto, intermittent fasting.
Yes.
All of the new best way of losing weight.
Yes.
Unsurprisingly, rubbish. These are all methods, not solutions.
Yeah.
So one method is to eat whatever you like and keep an eye on your calories. One method is to do a keto diet, but the only way that will make you lose weight is if you're having less calories than you were previously.
Yeah.
One method is intermittent fasting, which basically is skipping breakfast with a fancy name.
I actually do intermittent fasting, not to lose weight or anything, but just because I like eating later on in the day. Because if I get up at 6 and go to the gym at 6 and eat breakfast at 7, I want lunch by 10 and dinner by 4, and then by 8 o'clock I've eaten about 12 meals. So I do actually tend to start my day off later, but that's lifestyle though. Yeah. That's nothing to do with weight loss.
And I always say on any post that I do or on my page, I always say I don't have a problem if you want to do a keto diet. If you want to do it and it fits your lifestyle, it's sustainable for you, that's fine.
But do you not need, is there not some necessity to carbs? Just surely some people will be,
they're very
not
helpful.
Be very good at keto.
Yeah. They're very helpful. I you know, the problem is that keto doesn't rule out fibrous carbs like veg. And so you are getting some carbs.
Fine.
You're just not getting the starchy carbs like potato, pasta, rice,
right,
all that kind of stuff. So there is, I mean, I do think there are going to be negatives to cutting out starchy carbs, but the main thing though is that outweighed by if somebody's unhealthy?
Yeah.
Is that outweighed by the weight loss that takes place?
If it's a short time thing, I guess the problem is with any diet, it's adherence. So like you might be able to do that keto diet for 3 months and lose loads of weight, but if the minute you stop doing it, you go back to eating quadruple what you ate on that diet, it would be a completely redundant thing to do. And all of us have done that. I think pretty much anyone who's tried to lose weight has gone through the diet, the yo-yo diet thing. Yeah.
It's sustainability.
Yeah.
And it's if people always ask me when I was losing weight, they're like, oh, what diet are you doing? And I always sounded really, really pretentious by saying it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change. And you sound like a twat when you say that, but it's true.
Yeah.
It is true. And if I'd have dieted like I tried to previously, and we all know that diets don't work because diets are short-term changes of behavior to do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, they work. Anything works. If you do a week of drinking soup and nothing else, it will probably work. If you do a keto diet and you are in a deficit, it will work. If you do intermittent fasting and only eat for 6 hours of the day, it might be hard to fit more calories in there than you were usually doing. So it might work. But unless you're going to do that for life,
yeah,
what's going to happen when you stop? If you haven't learned anything, if you haven't improved your relationship with food in the meantime, and I don't think by cutting a macronutrient like carbs that you have to do on the keto diet,
yeah,
I don't think that's a good way of improving your relationship with food. And when you stop, you will put weight back on because you won't have, nothing will have changed. So as soon as you can eat carbs again,
you'll add it back in. Yeah.
You will, and so you'll end up being in a surplus again, not because carbs are bad, but because you don't understand it won't make sense to you, the whole balance of nutrients and calories, and so you'll put stuff back on. And it's not a harmful it's not a neutral intervention. It's what people don't realize is that when you diet and put weight back on, and then you lose weight and put weight back on, every time you yo-yo, every time you lose weight and put it back on, that weight goes back in different places. So you don't put the fat back on in exactly the same place in your body.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Fat, the reason why there's a whole range of healthy weights is because fat can be harmful for our cardiovascular system and our health, depending on where the fat is.
Do you mean if it's like visceral fat or
exactly? So fat subcutaneously, fat around the hips, fat in the bum area, that has very, very little impact on our heart health. It has very little impact on our risk of diabetes. It has very little impact on our health in general.
Yeah.
And so you may weigh a lot on the scales because you have a lot of fat around in a pear shape, which isn't a thing, but it's a descriptor.
Yeah.
So that's why a pear is technically healthier than an apple, because fat around body doesn't affect your risk of these diseases. Fat around your liver, fat in your abdomen, that increases your risk of diabetes, it increases your risk of heart disease, it changes a lot of things.
But you won't necessarily be able to see that, right?
No.
So you could be slim with loads of that fat.
And that's why people go, oh yeah, but what do you mean fat causes diabetes? It's sugar, because I have a slim friend and they've got diabetes. And I went, yeah, but you don't know how much fat they have around their liver.
Yeah.
The reason why the South Asian population are more likely to get diabetes at a lower body weight is because genetically they hold more fat around their livers.
So interesting.
It sucks, but that's just truth. That's how it works genetically. And so we need to be looking at these kind of things. But the yo-yo dieting, if people have a lot of fat subcutaneously under the skin, around the hips, and they lose a whole bunch of weight, and then they put weight back on, and then they lose a bunch of weight, they put weight back on, the body is going to try and protect itself. And by that, it's not going to put you in some starvation mode, because again, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
But what it is going to do is it's going to put the fat back in places that are harder to get rid of.
Oh,
because it wants to protect itself. It's easier to get rid of fat subcutaneously, but it's harder to get rid of fat viscerally.
So if you yo-yo diet,
if you yo-yo diet, the fat won't get put back on your bum again. It may do, partially,
yeah.
But it will also be put preferentially around your organs.
Can I ask you a question about
that?
Which
then leads to all that health problems.
Am I right to think that we're born with all of our fat cells? And then it's not that you get more fat cells, the fat cells get bigger, the fat goes into the fat cells. And unless you're pregnant, that's the only time you can grow more fat cells. Have I just made this up?
I can't give you a 100% answer to that, but that's roughly right. So there are, the majority of the time, the fat cells that we have get larger rather than multiplying number.
Right. So is that why some people are more predisposed to be fat, because they could have be born with more fat cells? Can you be predisposed to be fat?
I think that might be slightly simplistic in terms of reasons. I'm not convinced about that.
I just thought it sounded good.
I think, to be fair, I think one of the main reasons and one of the things that that science is looking at the most at the moment is your gut, and actually how say you've got, and again, I don't always go back to calories, but let's say you eat 1,000 calories of a certain type of food, whatever it is. Some people's guts will be incredibly efficient. And so you'll eat 1,000 calories, your gut, you'll digest it, you'll break it down, you'll absorb all 1,000 calories, or close to. Some people's guts will be incredibly inefficient. And so you'll eat 1,000 calories, you'll break it down, but you'll only absorb 600 of it.
Oh, interesting.
And so people that, we all knew the person that could eat 10 pizzas and never put weight on. Maybe that's why.
What, they've got a shit gut?
No, not shit, it's just less, their bacterial makeup. Yeah. And that's also a reason why perhaps genetically it runs in families, that the bacteria in their gut isn't as efficient at absorbing all the calories. So they would do rubbish if we lived 3,000 years ago when we had not much food.
Right.
Because that wasn't a good thing to have genetically.
Yeah.
It was genetically advantageous to absorb as much nutrients as possible and as many calories as possible. But that's sometimes the reason why people, and there's loads of research going into it, but that's why that's sometimes more likely to be the reason why some people are born with an easier ability to store fat than others.
Because
they have an easier ability to absorb nutrients than others.
So you're better adapted if you can put, maybe.
You're better adapted to what we used to have to deal with when we didn't have an abundance of food. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're an advantage. I know it doesn't feel like it, but but people that, you know, find it easy to put weight on are at more of an advantage than people that aren't in the genetic, you know, kind of grand scheme of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. I feel like we've covered so much.
All the stuff.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you particularly wanted to talk about?
I would say one thing, and this keeps coming to my mind as well. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier about how people saw you as tiny and therefore thought that you must not eat anything.
Yeah.
And I know you changed your name from Tiny Tank to Unani. I haven't actually mentioned my name on Instagram yet, but it happens to be Unfattening, which might sound slightly
hypocritical.
Well, yeah, maybe it might sound slightly problematic for what I talk about, and I've considered changing it, but I'm not doing it just yet. But I just wanted to reassure people that the reason I called it that is not because I think fat is inherently bad. It was a descriptor that I thought was slightly catchy at the beginning of my journey, but actually at the moment I find that it kind of attracts people in who are on a journey that they want to lose weight. And actually I like the fact that I get a lot of those, because I then feel I have more of an impact, because I'm catching the people that are going, oh, Unfattening, that'll help me lose weight, and then they see it and go, oh, and it kind of challenges their perceptions as to what weight loss is. So at the moment I'm keeping it. Please don't attack me for it. I do have some people that message me and go, why are you called that? It's problematic. I'm like, I know.
I've actually just realized, because I realized that when you did it, it's probably because you were losing weight, right? But now looking at it and everything you post, it kind of sounds like what you're saying is not all of the stuff that you think is fattening. Because of all your posts are usually about reclassifying the way we look at food, I actually think that when I read it, I see it as you going, this isn't fattening, even though you think it is. And you say this, Shona said this, and I do this too. I'll write a whole post about relationship with food, about healthy eating or whatever, and I'll hashtag fat loss, hashtag weight loss, because I want people who are looking for those hashtags to come and read this, because they'll go to read a fat loss post expecting...
Hashtag low carb.
Yeah, and expecting something, and then hopefully they'll read my post and go, oh.
I don't want to always be in my bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
I do want people who are wanting to look at improving their relationship with food to be in the community that I'm trying to build, because it is so massively important. And I don't get it right every time, I promise. I still, you know, there are still posts that I'm kind of like, this might be problematic. And I think one example of that was, there was one that from a numbers point of view did quite well the other week about intuitive eating and donuts. And I wrote something on it about how intuitive eating means that you can eat a donut, it's fine, you can eat whatever you want, you have unconditional permission to eat donuts. I also wrote at the same time that just because you have permission to eat 20 donuts, does that mean that you should? And I got flack for it, and I'm still slightly I get where people are coming from, that it's not unconditional permission if you put conditions on it. But again, I do think it's important to see both sides of some of this stuff, that yes, we have permission to eat whatever we like, but at the same time, we are also wanting to be healthier individuals. Yeah. We are wanting to do that kind of stuff. Everyone's in different stages of their journey. It may be important at the beginning of your journey to give yourself permission to eat 20 donuts. That's absolutely fine. In a week's time, you probably won't want 20 donuts. But some people in their journey, it might be important or might be useful for them to hear that
they can
that they can eat donuts, but that eating 20 might be unhealthy. But again, I'm happy to be wrong, and I'm happy for people to challenge me on anything. I will listen. I might not always agree, but I do care more than you think.
But the funny thing is, it's only when it's food that it's this panicky, this careful, this personal, and this attacking. Because if I said to you, obviously you could not go into work and drink 4 bottles of wine if you wanted, realistically, you know that I need to go into work because I've got to earn money. It's my job. I can't let other people down. I can have a glass of wine. And we can make all of these rational understanding. Yeah, yeah. Even if you might want to stay at home and drink wine all day, you'll be like, I know. With food, we don't seem to have the same rationale. Yeah. We don't seem to be able to make these decisions. And it is because of all the social conditioning.
That's how I responded to one person, that she said that. She challenged me on it. And I said, I get that. But in the same vein, you have unconditional permission to never exercise.
Yeah.
But if I told you that was okay, I wouldn't necessarily feel right about it, because if you exercise, it's great for you. And so just because you have permission to do
just
whatever
you
like,
can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. But at the same time, I get it. It can be problematic. And so, just feel free to come and challenge me. I like challenging. But
it's very hard, because you'll see this with me, because I will actually write captions that have got 6 comments below them, because I can't physically in the comment section fit what I'm trying to say.
And no paragraph breaks either.
I know. Sorry.
Come on,
I get very excited.
Sort it out.
I don't know how you do that shit.
I'll
mine unformat.
It just makes it harder to read.
But I know, but it's so difficult because you have such a small amount of time. And I've written this. I wrote this in a post the other day, but the person reading my post could be anorexic, obese, with mental health. There's so many people that I'm speaking to that no matter what you say, it's problematic to someone or some group.
And
so
I
the
do
best
commonly
you can do
say,
is try to caveat as much as you can, but you're going to miss some loopholes.
And I commonly say, if I make you feel worse about your food, even with good intentions, unfollow me.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
You need to look after you. And I think I'm doing good. If I'm not doing good for you, get rid of me.
Yeah.
Go and follow someone else who is far more anti-diet than I am.
I think it's the same with anything, whether it's consuming stuff online, your diet, how you're making friendships, media, newspaper articles, whatever it is, we need to consume consciously and relative to ourselves. And I think you're doing a great job at doing that.
Thank you.
And if people would like to follow you, you just mentioned, but where can we find you?
My Instagram is @unfattening.
Yeah.
There is a Facebook.
Does much go on there?
Well, there is now. So the Facebook page itself, no, it's just Unfattening on Facebook. But I do have a Facebook group now called Team No Nutri Bollocks.
Fab.
Which is my... Nutri Bollocks is essentially my way of describing non-evidence-based information around nutrition and health that is usually used to try and sell you something.
Yes.
So stuff like detox teas would be Nutribullocks, for example. Amazing. So I have there's a Facebook group now where it's great. It's amazing because I can't necessarily spend 20 minutes replying and talking to every single person that messages me. I do reply to everyone at the moment, and I talked to this. You said I'm crazy, but I try, but I don't have the time to be able to go in depth with some of that stuff. And it's great because in the group, people are posting their stories and other people are helping them, and it's brilliant. So there's a great little Facebook community on there. And amazing. Then I do have a website that I don't use that much, but it's just unfattening.co.uk.
Amazing.
And I'll put some more stuff on there at some point. But again, I have a full-time job.
Yeah, you are. I mean, it is hard.
I've got exams coming up, so, you know.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking your time out to join me. I mean, I literally, most of my job, I mean, I do other stuff too, is social media, but I, for the life of me, don't know how you're a doctor. And on social media, it's actually baffling.
My girlfriend tells me off.
Oh, fine.
I'm trying not to. Sorry.
But no, I've really enjoyed speaking to you. I feel like I've learned a lot. Have you enjoyed this experience?
It's been great.
Amazing. It's Thank awesome. You so much for listening, guys. Do make sure to follow Josh. I will link you in the box below so people can find out more. And I will see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.